Succession number 23447, reel 10.
Mr. Waller, reel 10. We're talking about the period, the rest period at Homs, near Tripoli.
Yeah.
And you were about to tell a story, a funny story that happened.
Yes, about in the middle of the night, we suddenly got, I got suddenly called out, and about 30 of us, 20 or 30, and we're told to get on trucks, and we dashed off. We didn't know what it was about. We eventually get to a road, which obviously ran down to Tripoli, and it was on a high embankment. And what the Germans or Italians had done and buried explosives in there on a time fuse, and the thing had blown up and left a great gaping hole, which meant that all the supply columns that wanted to come couldn't get through, and it was all the service corps trucks waiting. So you had the two ends of the road and a great gaping hole in the middle. So we get there, and the officer there in charge said, right, I want you to repair this, build a road so the traffic can get round. We really didn't know what we were doing there, and we said, well, all right. So, you know, when it was such a big crater, you know, you had a rim round you, so anything that we could think of, we got shovels and picks, and we started shoveling it up and building a road round one side of the rim of the crater. And we worked through the night, all right through till about 10 o'clock the next morning. And he said, well, what's happened? Oh, I said, well, that's the best we can do. And he said, all right. So he sends the first three tonner off, and it goes very gingerly round this thing. You get halfway round the crater, and it suddenly the ground gives way, and the three-tonner disappears down there. And the officer came out and said, well, that wasn't much good, was it? He said, a damn fine lot of REs you are. We said, what do you mean REs? We're not REs, we're RBs. They'd sent a signal for 30 REs, and somebody got it confused and sent RBs, Rifle Brigade, instead of Royal Engineers. So we all looked at him and all said, oh, this is a bit of the old World War One story, you know, send reinforcements. So off we went back to our usual thing. While we were there, it was quite interesting. We had the padre, the battalion padre, an ex-Cambridge man, had studied whatever it is, architecture, ancient sites, and he organised a trip to Leptis Magna. He knew all about it.
Where?
Leptis Magna. It was a Roman ruins just near on the coast near Tripoli.
Did you go?
I go, yeah. There was only about 30 of us out, the whole battalion, you know, the rest sort of said, we don't want to go. It didn't appeal to them, but about 30 of us went, and it was quite fascinating because the Roman ruin, this arena, the Italians had been restoring it, digging it up, excavating, restoring it prior to the war, and it got left there, and I believe since then it's on the scheduled list of archaeological sites, you know, if you go on an archaeological holiday, and it was most interesting. But the beauty of it was it had a large arena. You know, you had the stone steps, you know, like where you could sit and watch the Christians thrown to the lions type of thing. That sort of building. And we were surprised. We went round, and the padre, rather coyishly, said, you know what this is. And carved in the stonework was a large man's penis. Apparently it belonged to the section of the ran the oldest profession in the world. You know, I didn't know it went on in Roman times. But the arena was great. The lads started forming a divisional concert party, and rig up a bit of canvas, you know, the room has got the electrics going, and they got some stuff, and they were good. We used to go along, and the acoustics were first class, and we used to have this divisional concert party.
What sort of act was it? What sort of a show would they put on?
Well, it was mainly a band, because, as I say, the Army Welfare Services then would come in and send us stuff up, you know, instruments and things like this, got them sent up. And they had we had a band, and it was a very good singer. And I can still remember this day, the one song that brought the house down was Tangerine, She's All I May Claim. And this, they used to put on a show, and, you know, there were one or two funny bits, blokes dressed up as women, you know, the usual thing that you do. And then the big event came, they said the Old Vic people were coming out. There was Laurence Olivier, Ralph Richardson, Vivian Lee, and they were all coming out. We didn't quite know what they were going to do, but we soon found out. They came out there, and Vivian Lee walked on. And, you know, these blokes...
This was in the arena as well?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they came on and did this. And I said, I got this poem I thought you might like. And there's all these blokes that have been in the desert for 2.5 years and 3 years, never seen a white woman. And she comes out and recites a poem. And there was a deathly silence. And then she said, what would you like me to do next? And one wag said, show us your legs. And another one said, can you sing? And she stormed off. And the Old Vic went suddenly departed and went back to England. I mean, it was ludicrous, it really was. So we went back to our normal concert party. And life continued quite nicely. We sort of got back, won't say to peacetime soldiering, but, you know, you were sort of doing things and people were checking out on King's Regs and finding out what to do. And then we had a visit from the SIB, Special Investigation Branch. They came along with the Red Caps, somebody had obviously said something, and they were coming to check what loot had been liberated or whether you had weapons. And I think this was because there was the rumour that we might be going back to the UK, and they didn't want everybody to go back with a kit bag for the Lugers. Anyway, they came round, but we got tipped off in advance, and I myself buried a sandbag full of Berettas in the desert, dug a hole and buried them, and everybody was hiding stuff. Anyway, they came round, they found nothing. Indeed, I never found my... I got a mine detector, I never found my... I buried him too well, never found my sack full of Berettas again. And it wasn't... Nobody found anything, and life continued. And it wasn't till we moved from there that the truth dawned. What everybody had been pinching was staff cars and extra vehicles. And when we left the site, there was something like 20 to 30 vehicles left around, you know, that weren't on strength, you see. But we carried on there, and they used to do leave trip to Tunis. It was a hell of a way. They used to set off with two drivers and drive through the night and get there the next day and have a day in Tunis and drive back. And I forget how many 100 miles it was, but the two of them used to belt along, and it was a competition to see who could do the trip from Homs, Tripoli to Tunis the fastest, you know. And that was one of the sort of pleasant little pastime. And you also, you got day passes to go into Tripoli, and they set up a canteen there and so forth. And that's how life continued, until suddenly one night they came in and said, right, everybody out, get down to the vehicle dump at the docks, grab any trucks, three tonners, whatever you can that go, and get down to Tripoli docks. And notice what's up, get down there, get on get on board. Sorry, may I interrupt one thing? Before that happened, there was a victory parade in Tripoli.
Tell us about that.
And the King and Churchill came out. Now, we, obviously, they had all the tanks lined up in the town and so forth. But our regiment, we were on the road leading out of Tripoli, which was open sand, was just a road that went through it. And we're standing along there. We'd just got a new colonel who had been in somewhere in East Africa in charge of a native regiment. He had a hair lip and being like that, so we used to call him Colonel Nuff Nuff. And he came out there. He'd only been with us 2 weeks. And we were all standing along there. And we've been standing there all hour and a half, 2 hours, in the sunshine, in the hot sun. And I said, eventually I said, excuse me, Colonel, I said, do you mind if the lads have a smoke? I said, we've been standing. Oh, he said, all right. So, okay, lads. And everybody's just smoking away, and suddenly two red caps on motorbikes pull up and a car. And there's Churchill and the King in a car, and everybody sort of putting the cigarette behind the back and shutting, and the smoke coming out their ears, you know. And he stopped, and the King leaned over and said, oh, Colonel, how long have you been in charge of the battalion? And he said, oh, 2 weeks. He said, oh, and promptly drove off, you see. So,
now, what rank were you then? Were you back to corporal or sergeant or...?
I was back a sergeant then. That's why they all say to me, Sarge, ask the colonel if we can have a smoke, you see.
So, what did it make much of a difference being promoted to sergeant?
Well, in pay, of course. Yeah.
Were you still just, I mean, what was your job? I mean, were you in charge of a section of anti-terrorism?
Yeah, you see, you work with one, but you're in charge of two guns a section. But you will sort of stop with one to act as a number one, and the corporal acted on the number two.
Now, you were telling me about the embarkation.
Yeah,
this is for the Sicily operations in July.
No, Salerno, Italy.
So that you were there right through till September. You weren't in Sicily at all.
Sicily. And so we then go down during the night.
So you've been there from May right through to, early September.
Yeah. Everybody's getting a little bit edgy and impatient, you know, what the hell are we going to do? And we then, had to go down, pick up trucks. And I think most of them were what we got from the 4th Indian Division, all bit clapped out anyway. But we got these trucks, and we'd handed it, when it finished, we'd handed everything in, or most of it, you know. We were on a skeleton thing, which was reinforced a rumour that we were going back to the UK or back to the Delta. Anyway, we got these trucks and went down the vehicle place, got these trucks. Off we went down to the docks and loaded up on... when I say landing ships, you know, the ones that, not the landing craft, you know, the small stuff, but the landing LTCs, I think they were called, landing tank ships, or LTS, you know. In other words, you drove trucks and tanks on them, and then they dropped the front and drove off at the other end. And away we went.
What was the journey like?
It was quiet and pleasant. Nothing happened. We got, you know, sort of quite relaxing until we got to near Salerno. And
now, had they already landed?
They'd already landed, because we was being sent. We were then told that we would be under command of the American Fifth Army.
So, when about was it? Was this? I mean, how many days had they been ashore?
Not too long, because they hadn't moved far inland. You know, things were at stalemate from the landing. So, how many days I'd have to check on, but it wasn't many days. You see, things what had happened. Things had gone wrong, and to give some idea, it was when what is termed as the Salerno Mutiny, when things had gone wrong, and they were going around the rest camps, convalescent camps, dragging personnel out to send out because they badly needed infantry. But we then went...
Now, what was morale like among you all? I mean, there'd been a bit of unrest because you hadn't been sent away, playing with your rifle bolts and things like that.
Yeah.
What happened? How did people react when they were actually sent to Salerno?
You know, suddenly the bullshit attitude disappeared, you know. It had been decided for us, and, you know, they accepted it. And we got out there. There was... they were obviously held up fairly near because as our ships pulled in, there were shells coming over. It was long-range shelling, but we were getting the ship. They were obviously aware that reinforcements were coming in, and they were shelling the ships. And
were you coming into the harbour? Or?
No, towards the beach. And because I remember, you know, when some of them were a bit near and went off and everybody hit the deck, and our dear new colonel was standing there, and he said, "Oh my God, what do we do now?" And suddenly he said, "Get down before they blow your bloody head off." then we landed, as I say, we I don't think there were any real casualties, you know, it was, and we landed at Salerno, moved it away inland.
What do you remember about the landing? Any problems?
No, it was nice. It was further inland that they were held up. So
you just drove off the LCT?
Yeah, we just drove off and moved in. And what was it? I think it was a verso we made for. We gradually moved in. The only thing, it came as a bit of a shock to us. I mean, in the desert, there were no civilians involved. Oh, yeah, the odd goat herd man or Arab, and the towns weren't much to talk about anyway. So, but when we got there, suddenly there were villages we bombed, and there were civilians and refugees, and this came as a bit of a culture shock to us. You know,
did it worry you?
Yeah, it did. You know, we thought, oh, God, you know, I mean, before it had been a bit like nights on a battlefield, you know, in the desert, and you didn't see any civilians involved. But, you know, we got into one village, you know, and we were sitting there, and suddenly there was a young woman, I mean, I suppose she was, what, in her late teens, about 20, with a couple of youngsters, about four or five, and coming in saying, well, it was our house, and could she go and look to see if there was anything worth salvaging, you know? And it, sort of, this is something we never come across. So, you know, it was strange at first, you know. And the early part of the day was we weren't involved too much in the early bit. Got through, went through a verso, got through to Naples, and we stayed there for a while. Some bright officer thought morning PT would be good. We could go out and run up Vesuvius and run down again.
You didn't, did you?
Yeah, only in the bottom bit, like. But you know, he said we'd run up Vesuvius. Let me see what he said. Better get rid of him, send him out on night patrol, and don't come back. You see. But yeah, we stopped off outside, just near. We were outside Naples.
How did you get on with the local population there? I mean,
they were all fine, you know. And
did they make you welcome, or were they unfriendly?
Yeah. I think they preferred us to the Germans, shall we say.
What made you think that?
Well, it's just the general attitude, you know. I mean, whether it's true, they had an insane, you know, Tedeschi. spitting, and but you know, one, is it true? You don't know, or are they just making sure that they're going to be on the winning side? And so But it was after we moved away from Naples and started moving up towards the Volturno and the Grigliano, that's when we started running into trouble, action. But not so much for the anti-tank guns. It was, short-range stuff. And it was more the carriers and the infantry that took the brunt of it. They took the more of the fighting. And the anti-tank guns were, much to the annoyance of the infantry platoons and the carrier platoons, you used to say, it's about time those buggers did their share, ignored the fact that we'd taken the brunt during the desert, but they didn't sort of like that. And so, as far as anti-tank guns, there wasn't much to report. I can't even, the odd few shots we might have fired, but that was it. It was almost a quiet time for us, but the infantry platoons and the carrier platoons took a bit of a hammering. Because they used to have to go out and do the patrols and go, get across the river and that.
This would be the Volturno, the Tiano, the Grigliano, the Grigliano.
Yeah, and we got about, which came first, I think Grigliano was the last one, yeah. And we got as far as that. And then word came through that we were being relieved. It was delayed by 48 hours. During which time we lost some more blokes on patrol, but which we weren't happy about. But we got relieved by the Canadians, and they weren't too happy when we handed them over these old vehicles that we picked up in the dump and were just about clapped out. But we gave them to them, and then we were taken back to Sorrento. And the news was broken to us that we were going back to the UK.
Who told you?
Well, came down through the colonel. I mean, where
it wasn't higher up. It was Montgomery or anyone been visiting.
Oh no. Well, I mean, if it may have come down to from Montgomery, from GHQ to division, brigade, whatever. But I mean, our contact was mainly brigade. I got the division, and either the divisional commander or the brigadier from brigade headquarters were the ones that told you. But then they passed it on to our commanding officer and platoon officer, and we got it from them.
Now, how did you feel when you heard?
Well, I thought that was great, long last, it's coming off. And we were put in Sorrento.
Were you aware at all of the Second Front? Because,
Sorry?
That the Second Front was looming, that it might not be that good an idea to go back, Did you have any thoughts?
Not really. We were just too, having been away since 19, been away since about 1941, wasn't it? And this we're now talking about the end of 43. We were only too pleased to be going home. Anything further, we were put in warehouses and big warehouses, and we bedded down and. We were waiting for the ships, and we had one chap with us who'd been a merchant seaman. And we used to get him up on the roof and sort of look into Naples Harbour and say, any ships came in? Are they big enough to, take us? Well, not quite, And then one day, because he'd been trying to get back as a merchant seaman, fully trained merchant seaman, for years. But they said, you're a driver in the army, so, usual. You train merchant seamen, but no, you can drive a truck in the army, and they wouldn't sanction his transfer. But anyway, he watched, and then one day he said, that ought to do us. And these ships came in, and we thought, great. And then the Americans, I think they were paratroops, or rangers, and apparently they took the ships, and they took them back to Tunis or North Africa for rest and changeover. So we were still there. And I'm trying to think how long we were there. It must have been a few weeks before eventually we got the orders to move and we got on these ships.
What about was this? I'm a bit lost on it.
We got on the ships in Naples Harbour.
When? Before Christmas?
Yeah, oh yes, before Christmas, because we spent Christmas at sea.
December you left.
Yeah, so
you'd been pulled out of the line in November. You'd been there about a month, about six, 7 weeks.
That's right, yeah. We came out in November, and then we spent a few weeks.
Do you know the name of the ship that you came back on?
Yeah, we were on the HMT Transport Cameronia.
And what was the trip like?
There were one or two eventful things. It was quiet because the Mediterranean was open then. But the one thing was that the OC troops, I think his rank was major, was overall in charge, despite the rank of the serving officers that were on the ship. And he decided that he would... the first thing that started was there were complaints about the food and the crowded accommodation. And he said, well, after all, his reply was, after all, there's a war on, you know. And everybody said, oh, really? What the hell have we been doing for the last 3 years? Sorry. So then he decided that we should have boat drill in case we got dive bombed. So he used to sound the alarm and get everybody tearing about. And he got his crew to go around with chalk and chalk big circles, which were supposed to represent bomb holes. Well, everybody was a bit chocker with this. And they all charged across the top, you see. And he said, you're all dead. You're all falling down the bomb hole. And I said, no, we put a plank. He said, what do you mean, where the plank? Where'd you get your plank from? He said, the same place you got your bomb hole. And this sort of was going on, and things were boiling up to a mutinous stage. And eventually the senior officers and the brigadier said, look, these lads have been away fighting in the desert in Italy for sort of three years, whatever. I should just go a little bit easy, quiet them down, either that or don't go on deck at night. And so that was it. And then the next incident, they had a film show on the boat. But the first time they put it on, there was a panic because something went wrong and the film caught fire. And everybody dashed out shouting out, fire, fire. The film caught fire and the bloody thing went up in smoke and flames, you see. So we just quietly sort of sat there. We were packed, you know, on the boat. You was... like as usual on any troop ship or anything, you know, you were sleeping on the floor and sleeping on the deck and wherever you could hang up. And
what was the food like?
Pretty horrible. On Christmas Day, that's when we got that message, they gave us a chunk of pork which had been frozen. And it was still frozen, right? It was about the size of the palm of your hand, and you dropped it on the plate and it nearly shattered the plate, you know. It was solid and... But, you know, we've been used to crap rations for so long that it didn't matter, you know, we sort of put up with it. The only thing was that we eventually got back and we pulled in at Port Glasgow. Start going up, and all the girls went working in the factories and all came rushing out on one bank. So all the troops dashed over to one side and... this damn ship took a list of about 30 to 40 degrees and was on one side because the whole of the troop, all the troops were on one side of the thing. And it looked like he was going to capsize. So the red caps had to rush out and fire their guns and they sounded boat drill alarm and got everybody, some of them, to go back on the other side so that the ship could right itself. And eventually we docked. It was late in the day. It was either late afternoon, early evening, dark. And we just spent all that time, 2.5, 3 years in the desert in Italy. We came back and it was snowing. We were bloody freezing. And they loaded us all on trains and seemed to go on forever. We travelled from Port Glasgow down to Brandon Thetford in Norfolk. and they had these Nissen huts. And it must have been a bit of a quick emergency one, because they were still running round.